Hey guys, what an amazing opportunity we have this morning, right? I mean, if you can't connect to God in this environment, like Pastor Lindell said, oh my goodness, we need to talk. Like we need to figure life out. If there's some stuff that's blocking that connection, whatever it is, let's talk. See, I knew I was going to do it. I told Arnie this morning, he says, hey, the lid's off. I said, oh, great, I'm just going to spill it. Now he goes, don't spill it. Whatever, it's all good. Hey, welcome to Landmark this morning. It's a privilege to be here and to deliver this message that I have. And, you know, Pastor Paulette, I got a message from her this morning, and she's super excited to get back in here next Sunday. And, you know, she appreciates all the prayers, and she feels them. And she, you know, we got to talk yesterday about it, and she just feels the connection and the love that this congregation is so welcoming and loving. And we miss her. I mean, we just flat out miss her. And you know, it's nice to have her back next Sunday. So, Pastor Paulette, we miss you, and we look forward to hearing from you next Sunday. It's exciting news, right? We've had a couple of babies born this week. Cody and Ricky had their baby. Yes, they did. It's exciting. Raina Mercy is among us. In addition to Brittany and Russell, they had their baby, Bristol Rain, this week. So we are excited. Landmark is growing. It's an amazing thing, and I'm all girls, right? Yeah, welcome to my world. Yeah, all girls, so it's all good. So this morning, I have a message, and it's really about, if you think of it in the context of, you know, there's a secular success that happens, right? A lot of us strive for that success. So we're striving for something, whether it be secular, or whether it be we want to obtain things, we want to possess something, we want to be able to have a status, right? It could be a status. It could be a lot of things. And so this morning I'm going to try to answer, when does success become failure? When does success ultimately become a failure? And that's what we're really going to do. And we're going to dive into Daniel 4 this morning. And I just wanted to give you a little background about me. I came from a law enforcement career. I did that for 20 years. At the age of 25, I got hired by the district attorney's office. I was one of the youngest they've ever hired. And I got hired, and I was working in an environment that I thought I was the cat's meow, right? I thought I was just, I had arrived, I was good to go. That's one of the highest law enforcement jobs you can get without promoting to like a chief or somebody that's like the real big guys, right? The ones that do the hiring and all that. But I'm just like basic investigator. All I did was just, so that's one of the highest things that you can do. And I started that at the age of 25, which is unheard of. Became part of the rangemaster team, so I started working, teaching them how to do things. I became part of the investigation team that went out and handled officer-involved shootings. And so I was very active in the department. I wasn't just, most people think of the DA's office, you go there to just kind of retire. You just go, you're done doing what you do, and you're just going to go handle some paperwork here and there, hand out a couple subpoenas, and you're like, I'm good, right? I'm all in. I'm done. We're done for the day. That's not the case. So I was able to take some special training, so I was really active in the department, and that's where I really want to get at is I was really active. I was, like, at the time, I was the poster child for the DA's office. Like, I was protecting the DA, and we were doing dignitary protection, and we were doing special events, and we were giving presentations, and we were doing all of these things. And, you know, I was assigned to one of the toughest divisions in the department, and that was crimes against children. And where you're protecting vulnerable victims, you know, from the age of 6 months to 14, 15, 16, 17, right? That's one of the hardest positions in that job. And so I was doing that, and I had they're violent, they're senseless crimes against children, right? They're senseless. And so I was working those cases, and I was proud of myself because I had 100% conviction rate on them. Every case that I touched, that person that violated that child went to prison. Every single one of them. There was not a case I lost in that process. And the average sentence was 50 years to life. Average. You can shoot somebody and get 25 and you're out. But you touch a child and you're going to go away forever, as it should be. I'm all good with that. Right? Yeah, that's right. Let them see you. Yeah, nice knowing you, RIP. right? We were handling 20 cases a month, 20 cases every month. I was getting 20 new cases every single month. And so at the end of that, I say that only to say this, is that, you know, at some point you're like that, you get a sense of ownership, right? You get a sense of like, oh, look what I did. Look what I did. Oh, you give me a case, okay, that person's going away. Because you have this confidence, you have this buildup that it's all about you. And so, but at the same time, I was never home. I was never home. I didn't have a home church. Church? Why would I want to go to church? Like, I got to go protect people. I don't need to go to church. Church? Who wants to do that? That's Sunday, right? That's not the day you watch football or you go play or you go fishing or you go, you know, some people golf's a sport. Not really sure, but whatever, right? So, but I was never home. I didn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. I didn't have a relationship with him. I knew about him, thanks to my mom, who's watching. I love you, Mom. I knew about him because of her, but I didn't know him. I knew of him. The devil knew of him, right? I didn't have any friends. I guess you could say at that point in my life, I was friends of the friendless, right? I didn't have any friends. I had acquaintances. I was addicted to smoking. I was smoking 3 to 4 packs a day. I was stressed out. Those big old sodas, those 32-ounce sodas that we all love with that special ice in them, right? The little rabbit pellet ice, right? I was doing 10 to 15 of those a day. A day. I'd finish one, and I'd head to go get another one. I'd finish that one, I'd head to go get another one. Between the sodas and the smoking, I'm not sure what I did. I'm not sure. It was something in between, but I did it. My home life was labored at best. It was labored at best. It was unhappy. There was isolation. There was intentional overtime. I would work overtime just to avoid being home. I'd go do stuff just because. Oh, you want me to go stand on the corner and like tell people walk and don't walk? I'm in. I'm your guy. That means I don't have to be home. Sign me up. Right? Sign me up. And that was me. It was toxic. It was unhealthy. It was spiteful. There was a constant power struggle that was happening. And it was horrible. I was living beyond my means. I was banking on the fact that we had overtime coming in. I had this big old fancy truck, right? I look good. I look good driving this big old truck. Fancy cars, Harley Davidson, a boat, jet skis, a Jeep, big old RV, right? You name it, I had it. You name it, I had it. Now, was it paid for? Oh, no. No, 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 no. What's that? No, but I could make the monthly payment, right? As long as I was working. So, tens of thousands of dollars in credit card debt. I was living paycheck to paycheck. I was behind on some months, obviously, because I'm living way past my means. My reputation as a person was starting to become trashed because I wasn't able to pay for the things that I'd promised people that I would do. I was so focused on making that money that I wasn't able to develop that friendship with my neighbor, develop those things. This entire facade that I had built, I'd built this amazing facade. If you looked at me, oh, you thought I had it going on. Right, you thought I was like, I had it going on. I had all the cool toys. I had all the things that I wanted. I was doing what I wanted. If you looked at me from the outside, you thought, oh man, that guy, that's who I want to be like. But inside, I was crumbling away. I was crumbling. And did I mention I didn't have a relationship with Jesus? I mentioned that. I knew about him, but I didn't know him. I did not know him. I was achieving secular success at the highest level possible, but yet everything important to me was collapsing at my feet. Everything. So this morning we're going to study an Old Testament king in Daniel 4, verses 29 through 34, who also achieved this highest level of success at the highest level, but yet everything was collapsing. Everything that was important to him started to collapse. So this morning we're going to answer that question, when does success become failure? To do that, we're going to look at Daniel 4. It's going to be up on the screens, Daniel 4, 29 to 34. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is not the great Babylon I have built as a royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. "This is what decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from the people, and you will live like wild animals. You will eat grass like an ox. 7 times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from the people and ate grass like an ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lived forever. Will you pray with me this morning? Dear God, we just ask that you just be mighty this morning. We know you're here. We know you're here. We feel you. We know your Holy Spirit is with us this morning. I just ask that these words just resonate and they pierce those barriers that we place. Allow these words to just wake us up, Lord. Allow them to shake us. Get us out of our comfort zone. Holy Spirit, please join us to answer that question. When is success a failure? Amen. All right, so this morning we're going to look at Daniel 4, right? It's not something that you're going to run home and be like, yes, I get to go study that, right? You're not going to go and like wake up one morning and be super excited in your quiet time to go look at Daniel 4. It's just not one of those like super cool factors, right? It's not that cool factor like, except, do you remember Daniel 3? What happened in Daniel 3? It's one of the most famous stories ever. Right? It's taught in Sunday school. It's been taught in Sunday school for years. Right? Years and years and years. Right? Remember my three peeps? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Yeah, now you guys remember Daniel 3, right? Yeah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Remember that? Remember where they went? Remember why they went there? All right? Do you believe that God will deliver us? Do you believe that? Remember they got thrown in? King Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to bow to him. Right? He says, bow to me, and we'll leave you alone. Just a little bow. Just a little bit. And we're not talking like they had to like drop down on their knees and like go all four, all proned out. We're not talking that at all. Nebuchadnezzar said, just a little bit. Just bow, however slight, right? However slight. So, I mean, these guys, they're walking along, and how cool of it, I mean, how easy would it have been for them to just be like, oh, okay, oh, I had a cough, right? Good enough. That's all he wanted, right? Or they reach down and they're just going to tie their shoe. Ah, I need to tie my shoe. I guess I can't do that anymore. But what? I have a bench, right? Let's tie our shoe. There's always one. So all they wanted him to do was bow. They just wanted those three guys to bow. Bow to him. And they said, nope, not happening. We're not bowing. We're not bowing because our God is going to deliver us. Our God is going to deliver us, right? And even if he don't, our God is still our God, right? How cool is that? So what do? They get thrown in the fire. Remember that? They get thrown in the fire. He's got this solid gold statue of himself. It's 50 foot tall. You know, that fire is 7 times hotter than a normal fire. 7 times. Could you imagine being thrown into a pit of fire 7 times hotter? Dave, I don't know how you do it. You guys are amazing. These guys run into burning buildings all the time. I will chase somebody with a gun over going in a burning building any day. Just saying. You guys are awesome. And we love our first responders here in Porterville. They're amazing. And so thank you for doing what you do. But it's not, so you remember this fire is 7 times hotter. And so remember they get thrown in. They get thrown in there and he's like, yeah, you don't want to bow to me? Watch this. And he throws them in there. And then what does he do? Walks over to the edge, and he just looks down. He's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. Whoa, who's that? Right? He's like, who's that? I know I threw 3 in there, but there's 4. I see 4 in there. Right? There's 4 in there. Guess what? Jesus will join you in the fire. He will join you in the fire. When you think it's all over and you can't do anything, he's going to join you in the fire. He will be right there with you. It might be your last hope, your last resort, your last thought. He is going to join you in the fire, regardless of what fire it is. I don't care if it's a little smolderer. I don't care if it's a full inferno. He will join you in the fire. And we have to lock onto that. We have to believe that. We will have to. That is a powerful story, right? About Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being in the fire and Jesus joining them. It's a powerful story. And I hope that this morning's story is just as powerful if we let it. So we go back to the question, when does success become failure? The first place success becomes failure is when I claim ownership of it. So when I'm claiming ownership, I did it, right? It's all about me. I, or me, right? We see that a lot and sometimes in kids, right? They're like, that's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, right? But it's when I claim ownership on it. Verse 28, he says he was walking on the roof of the royal palace, right? Why would you walk on your roof? Think about it. How many of you guys walked on, other than repairing some stuff maybe, right? How many times have you guys walked on your roof of your home? Anybody? Like, you just, like, go up there for, you know, maybe 4th of July, right? You want to see fireworks better or something. I don't know. But you don't just walk up there and be like, oh, look at everything that I have. Look at my nice home. Look at this nice backyard. Oh, look at the flowers that we've planted, right? We don't do that. But you'll see that that Nebuchadnezzar does. And check this out. You guys know what peacocks are, right? Big old birds with the big old feathers. They're really cool, right? They're awesome. They have a strut that is like no other, right? They put them feathers out. They expand out, and they are beautiful. And they get that strut walking, right? They're walking. What are they doing? You think they're doing it for show? They're doing it to impress, right? So you got peacocks and peahens. I didn't name them, right? Peahens. I don't know where they got the name, but whatever. They are in full strut. When they see somebody, they're in full strut. So these peacocks are just like, they are like, caw-caw! Right? They are out there, full strut, and all these beautiful feathers, and they're walking around. They literally will stop traffic, right? If you drove down Caldwell at any living time in Visalia, outside of Exeter, there was a family that had them on the corner there. They would literally stop traffic because these things are just like, whew. Right? Oh my goodness, how crazy is that? They're like ninjas, right? They don't have any talents, so they're not like dangerous. They're not going to like come up and go, wah-cha-cha, right? They're not going to do that to you. But they got some teeth that are wicked. They got huge teeth. So they have a defense system for them. But he's walking on the roof like a peacock. This guy's walking on the roof overlooking everything. Like, look at what I did. Caw-caw! Right? I'm sure he didn't go caw-caw, but whatever. But he's walking over this kingdom that's 60 miles. The circumference of his kingdom is 60 miles wide. He's got walls that are 300 feet tall. Why? I'm happy with like a 5-foot fence, right? We're happy with a 5-foot fence. This guy's got a 300-foot high. They're 75 feet thick. The walls that surround this cabin are 75 feet thick. Why? He's got his gold statue of himself. The palace is 6 miles, 250 towers that protect it, 250 towers in 60 miles. And it's because King Nebuchadnezzar is claiming ownership, right? When you claim ownership, you are like, this is mine. Nobody's getting in. All right? I decide who comes in and out. I decide. Right? You see, in my career, I've been that peacock. In my law enforcement career, I was that. In the late 90s, I was working for a local police department, not here, but in the valley. I was working for a police department, and I was on patrol. I was working night detective, so I was out in a plain marked car, and I'm driving around. And all of a sudden, I come to this bridge, busy bridge that went over Highway 99. And I'm driving, my window's down, and of course, what am I doing, right? I'm drinking my soda, and I'm smoking my cigarettes, right? Because that's what you do when you're an officer. You're just cool cat like that. And all of a sudden, I just hear this screaming from a gentleman. It wasn't like a help, but it was like, hey, I'm over here. Hey, I'm driving. So I stop and I'm like, where is that coming from? Roll all the windows down. And I'm like, there's nobody out. It's like 2:30 in the morning. There's nobody out. And I'm trying to find it. And all of a sudden so I finally pin down where it's coming from. Well, it's coming from the overpass, the Highway 99. It's coming from the overpass. And so I finally see this individual. He's not walking on the overpass. He's standing on the overpass. And he's on the other side of the rail. On the overpass. There's traffic going on Highway 99. It's a very busy thoroughfare. He's standing on the other side of the rail. And he's holding on. And he's yelling, hey, I'm over here. Don't come any closer. Right? I'm sure you guys have seen movies and stuff where they have done that. And it was just like that. Don't come any closer. I don't want to. I'm done. I'm done with life. Can you imagine being a point where you get to where you don't feel like you have anybody? How lost this individual was? I look back on it now and I just, there's a lot of analogies that go into this story for me. So we start talking to him. My buddy shows up. My partner shows up. We start talking to him. Long story short, after an hour or so, we finally get close enough to him to grab him right as he starts to jump. We grabbed him. We pulled him back over. He started to fight. He started all kinds of stuff. We were able to subdue him, get him in the car, get him the help he need. He's alive, and we were able to do that. So I say that all to say that right after that happened, my notoriety went through the roof. Like, I had television cameras coming and sticking a camera in my face. You saved him. You're a hero. You're this. You're that. You're amazing. You're the best thing since sliced cheese, right? Immediate notoriety. Co-workers, supervisors, high-fiving. Man, you did it. You did it. You did it. I received an award from the city for saving this individual's life. And all of these things, and all it went was right here. It went straight to my head. My head started to balloon up so bad, I don't know how I ever fit through a door. Like, I was walking around like, caw-caw, yeah. Right? That was me. I did that. I did that. I did all that. I did every bit of it. It was all me. All of it. You see, I claimed ownership. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar is doing. Even though one chapter early, in Daniel 3, verse 28, he says this. He says, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who had sent his angels and rescued his servants." One chapter earlier. Isn't it crazy how fast we forget? Because you see, in the turmoil, we're sold out for Jesus. In the turmoil. When your life is bad, when you are struggling, when you are looking for an answer, you are sold out. I promise you. You're sold out. I will do anything to have you with me. Save me, Jesus. Save me. Protect me. Get me out of this. Right? Get me out of this. We promise him everything. Jesus, if you get me out of this, I promise you I'm going to stop drinking. I promise I'll never have another sip in my life. Never. Jesus, if you get me out of this, I promise I'm never going to slam it in my arm again. I promise. Jesus, if you just get me home without my wife finding out I wasn't where I was supposed to be, I promise I won't do that again. I promise, I promise, I promise, I promise. Jesus, if you get me home, I promise I'm not going to hang out with them anymore. I'm not going to go to that dance with them anymore. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not going to do any of that anymore. If you get me out of the jam that I'm in right now, I am not going to do it anymore. I promise. But you see, it's culturally, it's very hard for us. And you know why? Because we built nations on doing it ourselves, right? This nation was built on it. From World War II, we built nations on it. We get in the game, right? Get in the game, right? Oh, I got a boo-boo. Rub some dirt on it. You'll be all right. Get back in the game. Get back in there. Oh, my arm's cut off. Well, put a Band-Aid on it. Let's go. That's what we've done historically for generations. Put a Band-Aid on it. Get back to work, right? Some cases, it's super glue, right, Dave? Put some super glue on it. You'll be all right. You know that there are over 24 do-it-yourself shows on this earth, on cable TV right now. 24 of them. Do it yourself. There's thousands of projects on the internet, right? You can go on Pinterest and you can do it yourself, right? You want to fix something? Google it, right? You can fix it. And if not, just hope you got a friend. Hope you got a friend that knows how to fix it, right? Because usually you're going to have to fix more than you messed up the first time because you really messed it up, right? So I'm going to prove it to you guys. I'm going to prove it to you this morning that it's how crazy we forget, but yet we built a nation on doing it ourselves. But I need your help. You guys with me? I need your help. Finish these quotes. The buck stops. Grab the bull by the... What's good for the goose get rich or die. You can do anything you set your mind. Build it, and they will. If you want it done right, you got to do it yourself. So what happens then? What happens then? Our reputation takes precedence, right? When we do it, our reputation takes precedence. Check out verse 30. Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? Sounds a lot like I, right? Me. But yet the Bible tells us in 2 Corinthians 10, verses 17 and 18, let the one who boasts in the Lord. What? For it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. That's who I want commending me, right? I love y'all, but if I got a choice between getting commended by Pastor Lendl or the Lord, guess who I'm going with, right? I mean, even though it's, I love it. I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But who do we really need approval from? Who are we seeking approval from? Are you seeking approval from your coworker? Are you seeking approval from your boss? Are you seeking approval from your friend? Remember the facade we talked about? Are you seeking approval from your friend who has everything in his driveway next door to you? Don't. Don't. Because you don't know what that facade's going to do when it cracks. And it's going to crack. It's going to crack. I promise you. If it's not biblically based, it's going to crack. It's going to happen. And when it does, it's going to be even worse. So I ask you this question. What in your life are you gloating over today? That one stung, didn't it? Where is your reputation taking precedent? Where have you taken ownership? You know, my wife and I were blessed to have a walnut ranch out north of Visalia. And from day one of being able to purchase this property, we have both said, it's not ours. It's not ours. This is God's. We just get to manage it, right? It's not ours. We can open it up, have whatever there. If we can use it for His glory, I'm in. I'm in. I don't care what it is, I'm in. Kids want to come out and do whatever they need to do, climb in some trees, whatever. If it's going to lead them to God, I'm in. I'm in. If it's going to glorify Him, I'm in. It's not ours. You see, the mindset is it all belongs to God. And luckily, you know, He's trusted us to manage it. And you got to be good stewards of the management, right? You got to be good stewards of it. But at the same time, you got to keep in mind that it's all His. Everything we have is His. Now let's look at how failure plays out. What does this produce? When we start to fail, what does it produce? What does it manifest? What are the results? What are some of the dangers that we have to be aware of when we start to take ownership, when we start to take that it's all about us? The first thing that it does is God's going to strip away that facade. You start taking ownership of it, He's going to strip it away. You know, it's kind of like we have these facades in life. Like, think about this. How effective is that seatbelt in an airplane? Think about it. Is it really going to save you? Let's just be real. Come on, can we be real? Can we just get real for a second? Is that seatbelt going to save you? Probably not, but you feel good putting it on, don't you? Right? And we're good stewards of following directions, right? Put it in, click it, clasp it, make the click, let it drop, right? Two exits over the wings here and here, and you're going to go and you're going to do all this stuff. And if we have a water landing, there's a seat that's going to come out. Grab the seat and put it through your arms. Really? Think about it. How safe is that seatbelt? I don't know how big planes are, but they're huge, right? And when we're talking a cloth strap about yay big with a nice cool little buckle on it, do you really think that's going to save you? Woo! Remember when you were a kid and the boogeyman was coming, what'd you do? You hid under the sheet, right? We're going to hide under the covers. He can't see me. right? What happens? Is that really going to do anything? I mean, it's going to really protect, right? It's going to protect them. It's going to protect them. Millie, it will protect you, I promise. Or the monster spray, right? How many of you guys had the spray bottle, the monster spray bottle? The kids were upset. They didn't want to go to bed. There was something in the closet. And what did you do? Just walked around and sprayed this water. The monster spray, right? We're going to protect them, right? But it's a facade. See where I'm going with that? It's a facade. In verse 31, even as the words were on his lips, a voice came over from heaven. This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. Woo! Bye-bye. Just like that. You guys remember watching The Wizard of Oz? Anybody watch that? All right, you're watching The Wizard of Oz, and all these cool things are happening. But what happens when the curtain's pulled back? There's no powerful magical wizard, right? There's no, it's not there. The real truth was exposed. So we pull back this skin, we pull it back, and the real truth is exposed. And guess what's there? There's a little winkling there controlling all these little things, right? Because the facade has been stripped away. So we ask, well, what is the truth, right? If we don't know, what is the truth? We're going to look at Psalms 18:2 to find that. In Psalms 18:2, some of you know this from memory, that the Lord is my rock, my fortress, and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield, and the horn of my salvation and my stronghold. All right? Amen. And when does this happen? Because when he is the owner, when you put emphasis on Jesus, when you put emphasis, when his reputation becomes significant, when his reputation succeeds your reputation, that's when this happens. When you have a personal relationship with him, you can't just know of him. You can't just know of him. That was me. I just knew of him, right? I knew it was good, but I didn't know how good. Oh, I didn't know how good it was at that time. I didn't know. It's different than just knowing of him. Many of us know him. You see, here at Landmark, what's really cool is that we strip those facades away. Pastor Paulette has an amazing ability to deliver the word exactly how it's written, exactly how it's said, exactly how it's intended. There's no facades. She's not coloring in a picture, I promise you. She is not coloring in it to make you feel better. It's not about making you feel good. If you're coming into this church and you're looking for somebody to make you feel good, we could talk afterwards. We'll go grab coffee or something, right? But when she's delivering a message, it's not about making you feel good. It's about telling you what's really happening and what you should be doing. And I'm so thankful that we have a pastor that's not afraid to make you uncomfortable, right? Make me uncomfortable. There's a couple of messages I was like, ooh, she's talking to me. All right, that one stung. That one stung. But it's amazing. And that's exactly what we need. There's too many times in society that we try to right, cancel culture, whatever it is. I don't care what it is. We try to cancel things because it might make somebody offended. We might upset somebody. They might not come back, right? You know how many times I've heard that. Oh, we can't say that because they might not come back. Well, you know what? It doesn't happen here. Because if it's in the Bible, guess what? It's fair game. Especially if Jesus said it, right? And that's exactly what Pastor Paulette preaches, and it's amazing. And we're so thankful for that. You know, I think back about this past Sunday, Art's testimony and Dee's testimony on Wednesday night, and I couldn't help but think, that's real life. That is real life. And there's a vulnerability that happens when you share. There's a vulnerability that happens. And I'll tell you, it's scary. It is scary, scary, scary. But you know what? We're safe. There is no judgment. You want to judge, like, you ain't doing it in here, right? And that's the thing that's so nice. And so it's real life. You know, the baby dedications, we're not hiding behind this facade of Sunday morning routine. We're not just coming in, right? We're going to come in, we're going to sing three songs, and we're going to be like, yeah, it's great. We're going to sing three songs. We're going to hear a message. We're going to give. We're going to be able to go out, and then all of a sudden, we're going to go to lunch, right? Because we got plans. We're going to go to lunch, and then we're going to go home, and then guess what's going to happen next Sunday? We're going to come in, we're going to hear three songs, we're going to hear a message, we're going to leave here, we're going to go home. We're not doing that. We're not doing that. And so we're going to be bold right now. We're going to be bold. And we're not just playing church, right? We're not just playing church. You talk about having an impact for God's reputation, come on into Landmark. And I'll tell you, you online, if you're looking for a home church, we want you. Come on in. Come on in. We want you. Because at Landmark, it's about putting Jesus first. It's about putting Jesus first. The second way this failure plays out is by God putting us in check. Ooh, yeah. See, in verse 32, he says, you will be driven away from the people and will live like the wild animals. Ooh. You will eat grass like an ox. Seven times will pass for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone that he wishes. You see, guys, he's correcting us. He corrects us all the time. Just because you want it doesn't mean it's in his plan for you. That doesn't mean it. Just because you want it really, really, really bad, no. He knows what the plan is for your life, for all of our lives. He knows it. More simply, he's just stripping it away. He's pulling back the curtains. It's kind of like Siri, when you miss the turn, what do you hear? Recalculating, right? Rerouting, right? I don't know how many times I've heard that. But, yeah, make a legal U-turn where possible, right? Oh my goodness, how crazy is that? It's like riding a ship that's off course. That correction could be ever slight. Or it could be drastic. You never know. It just depends on how fast he wants you to get where he wants you. You see, King Nebuchadnezzar hit absolute rock bottom. Absolute rock bottom. His isolation. He had to survive on grass. Guys, that's like eating rice cakes. Right? I didn't get this big eating salad, let me tell you. Right? Can you imagine me having to eat rice cakes? Woo! Right? Can you believe it took him 7 years? I did that for 7 years. We complain when we have to sit longer than 7 minutes. 7 years. You see, in Job 5, verse 17, he says, blessed is the one who God corrects. So do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. Thank you, Jesus, right? Thank you. I bet there are many testimonies in this room right now and online. If you were real with yourself and you were transparent about God correcting some of the things in your life. So why does it happen? Why do we need to be put in check? It's because God is king. That's why. God is king. Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. You see, as king, God fulfills. Right? Not us. God fulfills. As king, God commands. As king, God decides what's best for us. With his lip, God creates. In verse 35, all the people on the earth were regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of the heaven and the people of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, what have you done? Nobody can say that, right? That doesn't mean that you're nothing. That does not mean that. It does not mean that you are nothing. In fact, it means that you are everything to him. That's what it means. It doesn't mean you're nothing. It means you're everything. Do you believe it? Do you believe that that you are everything to him? Oh my goodness. Do you believe that it is God who can restore marriages? Do you believe that? Do you believe that it is God who feeds the poor? Do you believe that it is God who provides for the homeless? Do you believe that it is God who heals? Do you believe that it is God who takes the pain away? But in order for that to happen, we have to make sure that he's taking precedent. Right? We got to make sure it's all about him. In Jeremiah 32, 17, it says, "Ah, sovereign Lord, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arms. Nothing is too hard for you." Are you in denial of that? Do you think your problem is bigger than God? Woo! Do you think that he can't handle it? Oh, he doesn't. He's not going to listen to me. I'm like way out of his league right now. Like, this is way too much for him to handle. You believe that? Have you built a flimsy facade about God's love for you? Have you justified why it's okay not to go to him? Have you justified why it's okay that you, he doesn't really want to deal with this of me. He won't care. Oh, it's just a little thing. It's just little. Has your facade become your identity? Ooh. Oh, that one. That left a mark. Has your facade become your identity? It did for me. It was who I was. Everything that I wanted everybody to believe. Is your facade your motivation? Is that what's motivating you to get up on Monday morning to go to work? Is this facade that you're created, is that what's motivating you? See, another reason that we're put in check is because God is significant. 100%. Verse 34, at the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven, and my sanity was restored. You see, restoration means to put back or bring back into existence or use. It's something that was then gone. We'd used it and forgot about it, and we didn't pay attention to it. But yeah, when we restore something, it's to bring it back, it's to use. There's a lot of, you know, if you have older vehicles, you know about restoration, right? If you buy homes that need to be restored, if you buy an older home, you know about restoration. Promise, right? There's going to be a floor in there you got to fix somewhere, right? Or a sink or something you're going to have to fix. And so you know about restoration. It's to be brought back to truth, to reality. It's not only reality, it's God's reality. It's not our reality. It's his reality. This is the restoration of my being and my soul and my life. You see, in 2010, I went on a men's retreat. Now keep in mind where I was at. Keep in mind, I didn't know him. I knew of him, didn't know him, right? So I go on this men's retreat, and it's amazing. We go up to Wishon Village, and it's just an amazing time for men. There was 300 and some, almost 400 men that went on this men's retreat, and we're up there camping, and we're doing all the things that men do, right? We're doing all kinds of games, and we're having fun, and there's fishing, and there's hiking, and there's all kinds of activities for guys to do. And on Saturday night, there was an opportunity. The pastor gave a salvation message at that retreat, and I accepted. Hold on, I'm not going there yet. I can remember the rock that night, which is what happens on Saturday night. I can remember standing there trembling. My legs shaking so bad, I was sobbing uncontrollably. I'd been in law enforcement for a long 15 years at the time, whatever it had been. You didn't cry. Crying was a sign of weakness. You didn't cry. No crying in law enforcement. No crying, right? It's kind of like, there's no crying in baseball, right? I was crying. This peacock dance that I had was over. It was over. My title meant nothing at that moment. My conviction rate meant nothing at that moment. I could care less. I recognized the disconnect that I had with not only my friends, but family and just wanting to avoid. I realized that I was friends of the friendless and I had no one. You see, that night was the first time in my life that I realized that I needed Jesus. That was the first time in my life. I couldn't go on one more day coloring in this beautiful picture that I had created in life. And it was a gorgeous mosaic, let me tell you. But I couldn't do it anymore. This facade that I had created, I couldn't color in one more little square. You see, that night I got saved by the grace of God. I looked up kind of like I'm doing right now with tears in my eyes. Vulnerable, right? Vulnerable for the first time in my life. And I'd realized I had over 400 guys who truly stood side by side and that were willing to walk with me on this journey. The spiritual battle. You see, because God became all my significance at that moment. When I accepted Jesus Christ, God became all of my significance at that moment. In John 8, 12, it says, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he says, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Praise God, right? For some of you, you feel like everything good has been eaten away. You feel like you've been in a situation so long that everything has been eaten away, that there's no hope, that this is just who I am, right? One of the things I hate the most right now is the saying, it is what it is. Is it? Step out. Change it. It's not what it is. It don't have to be. You want to be a victim, it is what it is, right? You just sit there in victim pool and go for a bathe, right? It is what it is. Does not have to be what it is. It doesn't. Change something. Find a new circle. Find somebody that cares about you. Become vulnerable, right? Become vulnerable. Get in a relationship with Jesus Christ. I promise it ain't going to be what it is, right? You ain't going to have time, right? It's like King Nebuchadnezzar eating the grass. You believe that you'll never amount to anything. You believe that your sin is too great, or we have to run too far. I got to run too far to get away from my past, right? I got to run too far to get away from the decisions I made. Or better yet, I got to run too often. I just asked God to help me last Friday. And here we are Thursday night. And guess what we're asking him to do again, right? But it's okay. It's okay because guess what? In Joel 2, he says, in 25, he says, I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten the great locust and the young locust and the other locust and the locust swarm, my great army that I sent among you. You see, God's going to restore us. He's going to restore us. He will make up for all of those destroyed years. And he will give you joy and victory. Do you believe there's a difference between being happy and being joyful? Yeah, I choose joy. Every day of my life, I choose joy. Every day, I choose joy. Oh, my goodness. So, this is probably going to make me tear up, but it is what it is. Just kidding. I've asked the team to rejoin me up here on the stage this morning. They've worked really hard this week to learn a new song. And this is a song that's been on my heart for a couple weeks now, if not longer. And I want to share it with you guys this morning. And as they make their way back up here, I just... Do you guys realize what an amazing worship team we have? Do you guys realize that they take us to a place every single week where we can receive, we can praise, we can receive, we can shed the drama of life, and we can be in his presence every week? And they do an amazing job of it. So for that, you guys rock. You're awesome. Right now, I want them to take us to this place. I'm going to ask you guys. I want to encourage you to risk it all for God's significance right now. If you're at home, I want you to find a spot where you can just turn the TV off, turn whatever, leave YouTube, leave Facebook on. We're not done yet. Almost. But I want you to go to that place. In the house, if we can just leave on maybe one bank of lights, that would be great. Or whatever we need to do. I want to encourage you to go to that place. As they sing this song for us, I want to encourage you. I want to give you permission to worship an amazing God. That's what I want to do. Sometimes we need permission. Sometimes we know, oh, I can't do that because I didn't get permission. No, well, if you need permission, I don't know who I am, but whatever, you got it. Right? Whatever you need, like if I could do it, knock yourself out, right? I got the mic, whatever. If you need permission, do it. If you need that permission, you have it. Go to this place. When they get done with this song, I'm going to ask you a few questions. Thank you. Believe that this morning. Do you believe that our God did not fail? Do you believe that our God did not fail? Do you believe the God that we serve does not fail us? Do you believe that? Do you believe there is no ocean big enough? He will cross it for you. He will be there with you. To the rock of ages. left is highest. My goodness, is that the story that you're going to tell? You can just, Pastor Lindell, if you can just keep playing, I'm about ready to wrap up. You know, there's a, I guarantee you that there's somebody here. I'm not sure if they're here in this room or if they're watching online, but I guarantee you that there's somebody that doesn't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. There's somebody that's lacking the ability to tell a story about how he changed their lives. You know, in Romans 3:23 says that the cause of sin. Romans 3:23 says that we've all sinned. Every single one of us, we've all sinned. There's nothing that's we all fall short of the glory of God, paraphrasing it. There's nothing that we can do to get into heaven. There's nothing that we can physically do to get in. We can't work our way in. We can't buy our way in. We can't do anything physical to get into heaven. There's absolutely nothing. He says that in Romans 6:23 that the wage of sin is death. The wage of sin is death. It's eternal separation from God. Eternal separation. Oh, God. If you don't know Him, you're going to hell. Oh, my God. Oh, but the gift of God is eternal life. The gift, it's a gift from Him. In Romans 10:9, He says, if you declare with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe it in your heart, that God was raised from the dead. Guess what? I will see you again. We will see you again. You will be in heaven. Your pain will be gone. Your eyesight will be restored. Your body will be made new. You will... Oh, God. If that's you. If that's you. If you don't have a significant relationship with Jesus Christ, I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that right now. We're just going to go for it. We're bold. We're just going to go for it. If that's you, I just ask that you just repeat after me. If you're on Facebook, just repeat after me. Dear Jesus, we thank you for being who you say you are. You tell us that that we all have sinned and that there's nothing that we can do, that we will not be kept separate from you. That if we believe that Jesus died on the cross and that He rose again, if we believe that and we confess that with our mouth and we truly believe it in our heart, that we will be saved. And so, Lord, I'm asking you right now, I believe that you died on the cross, and I believe 3 days later you were raised from the grave. I believe it. I believe it wholeheartedly, and I believe that I'm going to see you again. I believe that you are who you say you are. Lord, I believe that you are an amazing God and that you want a personal relationship with us, that you are longing for a personal relationship with every single person on this earth. You are longing for it, Jesus. If that's you this morning, I just encourage you to connect with us. If you just prayed that prayer and you're watching on Facebook, send us a message. Connect with us. We want to walk along that journey with you. Let us connect. Just let us know how this has impacted you. You see, the risk God wants you to take is not focused on personal success. It's really not. It's focused on spiritual significance. And I'm going to leave you with this. What is the story you'll tell? What is your story?